return of operations. Let me also welcome the officials from the National Department and National Treasury. And also the Deputy Minister, who is present here today. I would like to welcome as well most welcome this morning to this briefing session with National Treasury. I would like to also secondly to say apologies to the chairperson of the Standing Committee, Honorable Paul Mashatin, has sent out his apology. He is overseas on official duty. The Honorable Sheikh Imam is not available as well. Ms. Low also has apologized. Honorable Nyalungu will be arriving late. The purpose of today's meeting is to receive a briefing from the National Treasury on progress that has been made thus far of the Employment Creation Facilitation Fund. We were pleased that we could have this meeting today. Initially, it looked like it was not possible to take place because of various engagements. You would know that the BRRR process is beginning, which will culminate in the medium-term policy statement towards the end of October. And so officials from National Treasury are engaged in various consultation processes. Equally, committees of parliament are going through those processes themselves to prepare for their own inputs to the national budgetary processes. We will then allow the Deputy Minister to make the opening remarks and then hand over to the officials to do the briefing. Over to you.
Thank you very much. I would like to appreciate the session, the opportunity we're getting to give a briefing on the Jobs Fund. I must say upfront that I think in the previous engagements at different platforms, sometimes there is a confusion to want to see the Jobs Fund in isolation from a range of initiatives that government is having to drive job creation. I would say upfront that it's important that we contextualize it, we see it within the context of a whole range of other interventions to grow the economy, to create jobs, etc. I don't want to say I would allow the natural to give the presentation and take the questions when they come.
Thank you.
Yes. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And it is appropriate to also say thank you so much. We do appreciate the extension that was granted to us to present. The only reason we had asked for that extension is because we were trying to finalize our agriculture funding round. We had to finalize allocations because it's planting season now, Chair. And so we're very appreciative that the committee did grant us an extension. I also have a team with me here, Xavier, who's the director of projects, and Tantiso, who's the grants manager, and Neville, who's the budget manager. And if I mess up this morning, I also have the CFO of the National Treasury and the Deputy Minister to get us on the straight path. So thank you very much to the committee. What I'm going to do is to briefly just set the context and present within which the Jobs Fund operates, how the Jobs Fund responds to the challenge of unemployment, what the fund's mandate is, some of the governance structures we have in place to ensure that funds are allocated appropriately. We'll spend some time on the budget for the fund. We'll share with the committees some of the fund's performance today. And we also try to speak a little bit about exactly what the value proposition is of the Jobs Fund and how it contributes to addressing unemployment challenges, as well as to share some preliminary lessons that we've uncovered through some of the projects that we have supported. So the Jobs Fund was established in the context of high levels of unemployment. It was but one of government initiatives to address the challenge, and by and large complements rather than displaces other initiatives. The fund's focus is different to that of the DTI incentive scheme, Community Works Program, and the Extended Public Works Program, to name but a few. This committee knows better than most that the level of unemployment remains high and that roughly 1 in 4 South Africans in the labor force are unemployed. South African youth face an even greater challenge. Using the definition of youth as 15 to between the ages of 15 and 34 years old, approximately 3.5 million youth are unemployed. That is 36.1% youth unemployment rate that we have in South Africa. Of every 2 South Africans under the age of 25, one is looking for work but cannot find a job. This is evidence of a chronic mismatch between the supply of labor and the demand for labor. Moreover, unemployed young people are typically unskilled and inexperienced. 51% have never worked, and approximately 80% receive no formal tertiary education. In terms of the labour market and gender disaggregation, in respect of the unemployment rate, there are more women unemployed than men. The unemployment rate for women is 29% and men at 24%. We also know that South Africa's per capita GDP growth remains low when compared to many other countries. By way of a quick comment on some of our labour market dynamics, we have an oversupply of inappropriately skilled labour. Our education system does not successfully meet the demand of the labour market. The productive competitiveness of other markets relative to South Africa has resulted in less demand for South African manufactured goods. That's the mismatch between what employers require and what the education system delivers remains a key labour market challenge for us, as do our regulatory framework, which continues to be perceived as challenging by employers. What have we done in terms of addressing the challenge? To address the challenge of unemployment sustainably, South Africa requires, amongst other things, high rates of sustained economic growth. The macroeconomic policy environment, infrastructure asset base, education system, and regulatory frameworks are all key determinants of our growth trajectory. The Jobs Fund is, however, not intended to tackle these long-term structural causes of low growth and high unemployment. Many other government initiatives are directed at these challenges. Rather, the Jobs Fund is an opportunity to complement these efforts with a limited and targeted program of support for effective labour market interventions that promise job creation in the short to medium term. Our mandate and objectives. The primary mandate of the Jobs Fund is to support initiatives that pilot innovative approaches to employment creation, to learn from these innovative models and build a knowledge base that can be used to contribute toward evidence-based policy making. The impact it seeks is to contribute toward achieving positive systemic impact on poverty reduction through the catalytic projects the fund supports. This impact is also achieved through sustainable jobs that are created through the projects that are supported by the Jobs Fund. At the end, it also seeks to create 150,000 new permanent jobs. In terms of the background of the fund was capitalized with 9 billion. It is now administered by the National Treasury. It was launched in June 2011. We've completed 5 funding rounds, and it operates on challenge fund principles. Allocation process is competitive and transparent. The fund co-financed innovative public and private sector projects with the potential to contribute significantly to job creation. Our partners share risk and cost by matching the Jobs Fund allocation, And the emphasis really is around partnership and collaboration, whether that be with the private sector, the public sector, or civil society. The fund seeks to overcome barriers related to cost, technology, infrastructure, and technical skills in the development of business models that can increase demand for labor. New sustainable jobs will be created over the project portfolio implementation period. The focus is also on projects that benefit women and youth. In terms of the Challenge Fund approach, this essentially means that all applications are competitively assessed against each other using a standard set of criteria that includes project eligibility criteria, such as the implementing partner's tax record, that the company is not in distress, that all regulated requirements are addressed prior to the project application. These sometimes are environmental impact assessments, water rights issues, and of course clean financial audits. Projects are also competitively assessed against the fund's impact criteria, which includes, amongst others, sustainability, innovation, value for money, and additionality. Funds are allocated in a transparent manner by an independent investment committee, and performance tracking and evaluation is also integral to the Challenge Fund approach. In respect of our impact on poverty, the fund seeks to contribute to poverty reduction and create positive socio-economic impact through the creation of sustainable permanent jobs, and thereby stimulating long-term systemic change in the labor market. This impact is achieved by a dedicated job fund PMU, by our project partners, which are both private, public, and civil society, through technical expertise and the selection of innovative project proposals. Key activities over and above the selection of projects with potential for sustainable job creation include fund disbursement, program performance tracking, evaluation, and knowledge sharing. Key outputs include the number of permanent jobs created, the number of placements into vacant positions, and the number of individuals have been granted a training opportunity. The intermediate outcomes the fund seeks to achieve include the following. Projects become self-sustainable, positive benefits result from being employed, learning results from project evaluation, which can contribute toward evidence-based policymaking. We have four funding windows. In the enterprise development window, the fund seeks to support initiatives that develop innovative commercial approaches to long-term job creation in ways that combine profitability with high social impact. In our support for work seekers window, the fund seeks to support projects that seek to link active work seekers, especially youth, to formal sector opportunities and job placement. The goal is to improve the quality and supply of labor. In our institutional capacity building window, the fund seeks to target projects that will improve operational efficiencies, remove barriers to doing business, catalyze innovation, and thereby scale up the potential for job creation. And in the infrastructure window, the fund seeks to co-finance critical missing infrastructure that can lead to improving the business environment for enterprises, improving their security. In terms of the sectors that the fund focuses on, we take our direction from the National Development Plan. And so the fund gives effect to the NDP through targeted support for projects in critical sectors identified in the plan. For example, smallholder farmer, commercialization, and tracing and placement activities. In respect of operationalizing the fund in terms of our governance, I've mentioned before we have an independent investment committee that makes decisions around which projects to support. We have a technical evaluation committee. Essentially, the role of that technical evaluation committee is to appraise the projects, to bring specialist knowledge to bear, whether it be an agriculture project or an infrastructure project, and in that way then make recommendations to the investment committee. There's also a management committee that oversees the day-to-day operations of the fund, and then we have very clearly documented operating frameworks, and included in those are guidelines on the management of our funding rounds, performance monitoring, grant management, and evaluation and learning. For example, the fund contracts on the basis of a detailed project implementation plan prepared by our applicant, and this plan is linked to a budget. And performance is assessed on a quarterly basis, and grant disbursements are aligned with project deliverables. If a project doesn't deliver, grants are not disbursed. Projects can, however, reproject performance on an annual basis because, as we can appreciate, things change through the course of the year. And we also validate performance of projects through regular site visits. And we request samples of evidence of the jobs that have been created. Chair, that's at a high level. I've spoken about our disbursement process. This particular slide merely sets out the controls that we put in place around the disbursement process, and we can return to that perhaps later if members have questions about our disbursement process. If we move to slide 21, we do have particular disbursement challenges, and these of course impact and delay the disbursement of funds. Some of these challenges include our job fund partners' ability to meet grant conditions. For example, they would have to submit compliance documents, or their FICA documents are not in place, or they don't have a tax clearance certificate. Sometimes projects deliver slower than they originally projected, which results in a delayed request for the disbursement. And sometimes, as I mentioned, our partners are not able to perform at an 80% of the set target required for that disbursement. So if you don't meet 80% of your targets every quarter, you don't get a disbursement. And we then have a much closer look to try and understand what the reasons are, and if there is a plan to address the delays in the project, then we then after that only disburse funds to the project. So at no time do we stop the project of funds, but we do make sure that projects have delivered according to their plan. Sometimes our partners would report on the number of jobs that they have created, but then there isn't sufficient evidence to support that, and once again that requires a site visit. Sometimes there's also the inability for matched funding, because how the jobs fund is different from many other government initiatives is that while we make available grant funds, those grant funds must be matched. And so if you're a private sector applicant, you must match us on a one-to-one basis. If you're from civil society or public sector, you match us on a 1:0.2 basis. That says to us that if you commit cash to the project, you've got skin in the game, and you're also committed to seeing those results. It's not just grant funds being handed out and you're not being held accountable for the results. And sometimes the disbursement is also... the disbursement numbers are also impacted by us terminating projects and aborting projects. And often the reason for that is that when a project had applied, they had one particular implementation model in mind, but circumstances change, and then often they request to terminate the project. now, in addressing the disbursement challenge, what the job fund does, it dedicates a project team which comprises of a project manager, a financial analyst, and a monitoring and evaluation specialist to every single project. It's ongoing engagement with partners to ensure compliance on all provisions of the grant agreement, and of course to try and resolve issues during project site visits. There's early identification of project challenges. Projects with capacity issues are identified and supported before reporting time, and projects are encouraged to put in more than the required match funding per quarter to cover unforeseen events. We also then attempt to improve our contracting processes. I've already spoken about the monitoring and evaluation framework, and if the committee has detailed questions, we can return to that, Chair. In respect of the Jobs Fund's budget, the Jobs Fund was initially managed by the Development Bank of Southern Africa, and operations have since November 2014 been migrated to the National Treasury and are now located at the Government Technical Advisory Centre. The increase in operational expenditure is mainly due to the fund's maturity. The project portfolio has increased, currently we're managing 90 projects, with a confirmed 18 new projects to be incorporated in the fund through the fifth call for proposals, that was our agriculture funding round. 2014-15 expenditure is relatively lower than 10 due to the fund's migration, which affected expenditure on operations and compensation. Currently, the fund employs 42 staff members, and these members are employed on medium-term contracts, and it is anticipated that the fund will peak at a complement of 69 contract employees, depending on the portfolio size. Due to the project nature of the fund, capacity is brought on on a need-to-have basis. The fund also insources technical resources when required. The Employment Creation Facilitation Fund project support comprises services provided to the fund by various business units and universities. These include the project development facility, the project development support by GTAC, the economic research provided by higher education institutions such as the University of Cape Town and UJ. In terms of our actual expenditure outcome, this slide sets out the budget summary for employment for the ECFF, for which I've just provided a few highlights and reasons for deviation, and to which we could return later to discuss in more detail, should the committee so wish. As I've already mentioned, expenditure in 2014-15, the jobs fund operations stood at 58 million, program support activities at 28 million, grant disbursements at 1.1 billion, and the total fund expenditure at 1.213 billion. In the adjusted estimates allocation for 2015-16, the jobs fund operation budget stands at 85 million, program support activities at 6.2 million, grant disbursements at 912 million, and total fund expenditure at 1 billion. In terms of further outcome in respect of the fund's first quarter expenditure, on average 20% of the allocated budget has been expended. As of June 2015, expenditures are 70% of the total adjusted budget of 42 million. This is in line with the activities that are planned for quarter three and quarter four, which account for an increase in expenditure in the latter parts of the year. This expenditure will cover project evaluations, projected closeout, project closeout orders, midterm evaluation of the fund. The expenditure on compensation was lower than planned by 5.4 million due to staff turnover and slower than anticipated growth in the project portfolio. We also had, at the end of quarter, 135 vacant positions. However, since January 2015, 11 additional employees have been brought on board. The budget has been reduced with 7 million during the adjusted estimates, mainly due to the reduction in operational items. Amounts disbursed to jobs fund partners are lower than previously planned, and the reason for that was delays in some projects reaching their milestones. A few projects were granted no cost extensions on the implementation period, and thus we had to revise our disbursement projections. The program support budget has been rescheduled and will now be managed on an ad hoc basis from the jobs fund operational budget. The UCT contract has been extended to March 2016, and we will defer the procurement of IT equipment in quarter three. In respect of the fund's performance to date, Chair, between 2011 and 2011-12 and 2014-15, the fund has issued four calls for proposals and has completed four funding rounds. A fifth funding round was opened in January 2015. All applications have been assessed, and by the 4th of September of this year, 18 new projects have been added to the Jobs Fund portfolio. Currently, the fund now has a portfolio of 108 projects. 72 projects are currently in implementation, 2 have withdrawn, 7 have been completed, 7 have been aborted, and 20 are in the contracting phase. In respect of grant allocation, as at the end of June 2015, 4.7 billion in grants have been committed. An additional 3.54 billion in match funding has been leveraged from project partners towards job creation. So as the committee would recall earlier on, I said that the job fund is slightly different from other projects. So over and above the grant money that government has made available, we've also been able to leverage an additional 3.5 billion from our project partners towards job creation. The agriculture round will see the fund commit another possible 800 million in grant funding to these 18 new projects. In terms of our performance to date, from inception to June 2015, 86 projects have been contracted. That's 96% of our target that's been met. 83 projects have been reporting on progress. That was 92% of our target. 2.6 billion in grants have been disbursed. 55,000 new permanent jobs have been created, and another 25,315 placements into vacant positions. This is another point at which the Jobs Fund is different from other initiatives, in that we define a new permanent job as somebody who has employment for a minimum period of 12 months on a consecutive basis. I have included the job fund definitions at the end of this. So those are not employment opportunities, they are permanent jobs. And the 55,000 are not new jobs, and those new jobs are as a result of the project initiatives that we have supported. The 25,000 placements are, earlier on we spoke about the mismatch between the skills that are required by employers and the skills that we actually have in the economy, and through our projects, improving that skills match, we've been able to place those 25,000 persons into vacant positions. In addition, 112,000 persons have also benefited from technical and work readiness training. In terms of the provincial spread of jobs, most permanent jobs were created in Gauteng, followed by KZN and the Eastern Cape. This, of course, is an outcome of where projects have been implementing. In respect of the distribution of income per indicator to date, the wage spread of most of the jobs that have been created are, of course, entry-level jobs, and most of those employed are youth in their first jobs. Interns and same beneficiaries also receive stipends, and the amount is often determined by the specific projects in which they participate. The committee will note that most of the jobs, in terms of the wage spread, most of that is between the minimum wage and 3,500, but you also have a significant amount of the wage spread being ranging between 3,500 and 8,000 per month. In terms of our current funding round, the fiscal proposal is sector-specific, as I mentioned. It targets the agricultural sector. The fund chose projects that demonstrate innovative approaches to supporting smallholder farmers by providing or enhancing access to existing markets and integration into agriculture value chains, by facilitating training, provision of farming and provision of farming extension service, as well as securing the viability and sustainability of primary production activities. And of course, through these projects, in the way in which these projects have been selected, it was important for us to determine that they would yield sustainable jobs. In terms of the Job Fund's value proposition, the fund contributes to creating additional demand for labor and job creation by facilitating collaboration and partnerships across value chains, by creating a space for innovation and risk-taking, the practical implementation, build a knowledge repository for evidence-based policymaking, by leveraging additional funds towards job creation, by supporting projects that are most competitive and commercially viable, which then result in sustainable job creation. It is a once-off injection of grant funds, which yield sustainable jobs and contribute to economic growth. Provision of critical support, for example, business development services for enterprise development, improving the match between supply and demand for labor through work readiness and technical skills development. Often, there is always a great curiosity about the cost at which a job has been created. Determining the true cost of creating a job is complex, and it is impacted upon by various factors such as the sector, the type of job, is it entry level or not, whether the project is an infrastructure project, either a new infrastructure or rehabilitation, whether the project supported is greenfields, whether the jobs are permanent full-time jobs or mere job opportunities, whether it is an ongoing incentive program or once-off grant allocation. And in this particular slide, we've given some examples of job creation projects, both national and international, and the committee will observe that the cost per job ranges quite broadly. What has to be borne in mind is that none of these costs are an indication of value for money, efficiency, or effectiveness of the program. The challenge with comparative analysis of conducting a comparative analysis of cost per job is the scarcity of information, the manner in which it is calculated, the point in time at which the calculation is made, and the cost per job, more importantly, as I've indicated, is not a signal of the impact that has been achieved. Other factors, I've already spoken to those factors, other factors that influence the cost per job is that in respect of the sector, the barrier to entry may be high, the cost of the infrastructure, and of course the type of project intervention. In respect of the Jobs Fund, portfolio. As I've indicated, the jobs fund, our portfolio is diverse and encompasses a number of different projects across four funding windows, enterprise infrastructure support for work seekers and institutional capacity building, and across different spheres, non-governmental, private, and civil society. The Jobs Fund addresses different barriers and challenges confronted by these vastly different projects in a way that catalyzes job creation. And the cost per job varies considerably from project to project, depending on the unique intervention. On this slide shows the cost per job spread for the entire approved portfolio of projects, that is permanent jobs, as well as permanent jobs and placements. The table shows that for the majority of projects in the Jobs Fund portfolio, the Jobs Fund has catalyzed jobs at below 100,000. In fact, the majority of the jobs that have been created sits at 60,000 rand. Noting that the additional value, of course, that is created by the provision of training interventions or internships or short-term jobs is not a part of this calculation, neither is the actual impact of where this job is being created a part of this calculation of cost per job. In the following slide, Chair, by funding window, this slide demonstrates the grant cost per job, and as well as the combined grant cost plus match funding from project partners across funding windows. And it shows that in respect of the type of project supported by the fund, the cost per infrastructure job is higher. However, at this stage, of course, we cannot fully comment on the potential impact of what that infrastructure would then unlock into the future. Another value for money indicator is the Jobs Fund grant to matched funding ratio. And at this stage, we have been able to leverage, achieve a leverage of 1:1.25. And of course, our Jobs Fund partners in general contribute much more than the Jobs Fund actually does. But the matched funding is not just in cash, but also in resources and other inputs that are not fully quantified. Youth comprise the highest number of beneficiaries from Jobs Fund interventions, and on the whole, women have benefited more from Jobs Fund interventions than men, with the only exception being in the area of short-term jobs. In respect of knowledge sharing, comparative reviews, quarterly performance tracking, and project-level evaluations have contributed to the knowledge base of what works and what does not with regard to job creation models. And of course, then the fund could then contribute to evidence-based policymaking and also provide insights on how projects can achieve scale and reveal what models are worthy of replication. Through our research, project evaluations, and particularly after the fund's midterm evaluation, the Jobs Fund will also be able to provide evidence on the following: how to improve the selection of projects and interventions that will increase the demand for labor and that will result in sustainable employment, improving the match between supply and demand for labor and identify interventions that ensure the training interventions provided by the project more directly enhance beneficiaries' employability and productivity, how to improve the facilitation of market linkages between public, private, and civil society, and the role that government could play in scaling employment models that work. Today, Chair, there's a few of our projects that have completed, but we have learned some lessons in respect of our support to projects in the enterprise development window. And some of the key issues that we've uncovered there, that it is very important to carefully select the partners and the beneficiaries to these programs, that the beneficiary should undergo an initial diagnostic, and we should put in place baseline data, that the relevant business training and support for beneficiaries must be in place, that coaching and mentoring support is fundamental, that accessing access to capital and finance must be a part of that program, as well as clear exit strategies for the project. So in our enterprise development window, in a nutshell, selection is very important. The period in which those small enterprises are incubated, the services, the business support that is made available to them, and as well, of course, having a clear exit strategy for their businesses from these incubators. The lessons from our support for work seekers window is also very very similar to that for enterprise development. It's important to have a strong selection process. The education and the training program is critical. There must be a work readiness component. There must be work-based experience as part of that program. The program cannot just be about training. The program must link up with employers so that once people go through the training program, they are assured of a job placement afterwards. And it is important to understand what employers are seeking from employees in order to upskill them properly. Chair, that brings me to the end of my presentation. I'm not sure if members we do have, but maybe we can do that. We can do that later, Chair. I have a short video on one of the projects that we support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Mandopa, Honourable Dr. Speak, Manana, Honourable Matukman, and all right, in that order.
Hey, Honourable Chair, thanks for the opportunity. We welcome the presentation. Thank you very much for the presentation. As a standing committee, we want to greet our Deputy Minister. We are honored to have you with us. As a standing committee on appropriation, we are interested in the expenditure performance of the job fund. Also interested whether are we getting value for money, because the expenditure alone without value for money is equal to something that is unacceptable. Maybe the first question, can we be appraised what prompted the need to move the management of the funds from DBSA to the unit within the National Register? And has this move started to bear results as anticipated? That is one, Chair. The other one is slide number 28. On the slide number 28, we want to check, you have got indicated that there is a low expenditure of by 5.4 million due to the staff turnover and projected growth in project portfolio. How serious is the challenge of staff turnover in terms of its implication to the broader performance of the job fund? And is it being managed effectively? The department should also give us more details about the reported challenge of lower than anticipated growth in project portfolio, so that we can understand what do you mean by that, what happened, so that we really understand that. On slide number 30, there is an indication of 108 projects in total that have been approved and 86 of those that have been contracted. We are interested to know which provinces or municipalities are 86 projects that have been contracted, so that this can allow us as a committee to really do the oversight. Maybe it's in our provinces and in our municipalities. So it would be proper for us to visit. Maybe if we can get a breakdown so that we understand exactly who has benefited. And also in your slide, you indicated that the beneficiaries of this fund, it can be the local government, NGO, business, and so on. so that we understand whether we are getting a buy-in, in particular in business. Maybe it will be proper to get a breakdown to say these have gone to the private sector. We have got a buy-in from the private sector. So much has gone to private sector, NGO and local government, to see which one really has come forward to partner with the government around the issue of the intervention. I understand that the Deputy Minister indicated that this is not the only intervention of government in job creation. There are a whole range of interventions in the government, but specifically on this one, maybe to really understand. And how much is budgeted for each project on these 86 projects that has been contracted? If we can get an understanding, how much? And how many permanent jobs are projected to each project? I know that the presenter indicated that the target is 150 new jobs that need to be created, and then there can be a full-time equivalent job or short-term job around the issue of the fund. But it will be proper for us to understand, because we are more interested on the decent job more, to say how many permanent jobs is going to be created on this particular amount. And also there is an indication on the same slide. It said project in current implementation, 72 withdrawn, 2 completed projects, 7. Why were these projects withdrawn and terminated? Can we share the reason around the withdrawal as well as the termination? And what stage were those projects at the time of termination? And what was the total cost for termination? Because it seemingly maybe it had started. We want to know the cost, the actual cost during the time of termination. Yeah, maybe at the moment I can pose the, maybe I will make a follow up, because I've got a range of questions. But let me give other colleagues a thanks, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Whilst the presentation gives us some information, I notice in the presentation the presenter said that there is inadequate, or they couldn't report properly because of the inadequate information that has been received from the beneficiaries of the grant. And I seem to think, yes, it's in the presentation, so I seem to think that this presentation as well, there's not much information for us to use to be able to really assess the success or failure of the jobs fund. That's what I see here. So, I would like to go through the presentation and then just highlight some of the issues that are of concern. I noticed on slide number 17, there's those committees that are established on slide number 17. And later on, I'll also highlight the cost of employment, or the cost of employees versus the operational, the total operational cost. Now, I noticed that there's a lot of committees here. Now, what is the total cost of the implementation, or the establishment of those committees, your investment committee, your technical evaluation commission committee, and your management committee? Because it seems as though a lot of money has been spent on compensation of employees. On slide number 21, this is a problem that we encounter with reports from quite a few of the departments, and I understand that compliance is necessary. You also mentioned in the presentation that anybody without a tax clearance gets excluded. I'm wondering if that is the correct way to treat somebody who is not tax compliant. It might be due to lack of capacity that a small business, and I'm specifically thinking of small businesses, they might be negatively impacted for the rest of their small business because they don't have a tax compliance certificate. So perhaps it might rather be to a better idea is to assist them in becoming tax compliant, because it might be just that there's something small that is is outstanding, maybe a few thousand rand. And as a result of that, this small business might not be able to engage in businesses for the rest of their lives, and in doing so, not being given an opportunity. On slide number 24, and this function has been moved from Development Bank of South Africa to National Treasury. What is the reason for that? What sparked that decision? And in addition to that, what was the cost? Was there any cost that has been lost as a result of probably work that should have been done by the Development Bank of South Africa, which was not or incomplete? Let me just get to slide number 25, which deals with the expenditure and which I was referring to. But just before I talk about that, can you just give us clarity when you presented 26 here. When you presented, then you quoted 1.2 billion. Is that correct? Because that, as it is there, it's 1.2 million. So I just need, it says one, there's no zeros at the top. I don't see any. Slide 26, sorry, apologies. Slide number 26. The figures as they are there, it's millions. So can we assume then that you just add three extra zeros? Okay, fine. That's fine, not a problem. But still, it doesn't change the question that I'm going to ask you. I see the compensation of employees for 2014-15 is, if I compare it to the other operating expenditures, more than 100%. Obviously, if I compare it to total operating expenditure, then it's about 3/5, which gives you 60%. So, again, and that's where I made the statement, it's substantially higher, where most of the money should actually go to the beneficiaries of the jobs fund. Slide number 30. Oh, before I move on to that, I noticed that we've got this jobs fund, but we've also got the National Youth Development Agency. We've also got Small Business Development Agency. So is there no overlap with the functions or the purpose of the jobs fund and the function of your NYDA and SDDA? Because I noticed that the emphasis or there's a focus on assisting the youth, and I thought that would have been the responsibility of NIDA. And then also on SMEs, there's also a focus on assisting small businesses. Let me just go on to slide number 38, Honorable Chair. No, sorry, apologies, I've covered that already. I'm not done, Honorable Manana. I will give you a chance. I hope you're not trying to protect me. I notice also we receive in slide number 32, if I go back to that one, the actual outcome is indicated there, but I don't see any target. So could we just get some sort of indication of what the actual target of that is? And then an interesting comment that was made, and with regards to permanent jobs. Now, surely, permanent jobs for 12 months, that cannot be a permanent job. So I'm just a little concerned about the definition of a permanent job for 12 months. Slide number 32, if I go back to that one as well, sorry. And there is, I notice you explained about where the projects are, but there is no expenditure in the Free State and the Northern Cape, low allocation of projects. Is that in line with the unemployment, or is it just because that's where the projects were identified there? Or what is the criteria that is used for allocation of projects? And then my last point, Honorable Chair, is in slide number 31. Just could we get more clarity on the projects, because it seems as though it's a small amount. The target, again, there's a target there of, I understand the percentage looks impressive of 96%, but the target doesn't look as though it's 1.2 trillion billion rands worth of projects. So you've got the projects, and then again, the number of new permanent jobs created, is that really worth the amount of money that is spent on it? And then maybe my last question, Honourable Chair, which I'm thinking of, is the project was established in 2011, and my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that it was a three-year project, so why is it only sort of gaining momentum this year? Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join those who welcome the presentation. I have some few questions that I would like to pose. The first one is with regards to the financial 2014-2015, where a total of 1.1 million was dispersed to projects that we indicated that was successful. Can I get a clarity? What is the spread of the jobs that were created in terms of urban areas versus rural areas? Of the jobs created in 2014-2015, how many benefited people with disabilities, given that this group is mostly affected by unemployment? And how much of the 1.1 million grant disbursement to project benefited small and medium business enterprises? The second question is if the department can indicate, can provide specific details of the 90 projects that are currently managed under the job fund. For instance, what is the nature and the scope of this project? Where exactly are these projects located? This information can help us as members of this committee in deciding on the oversight visit. The other question my colleagues have raised them, but the issue of the Free State and Northern Cape, can we get more clarity with regard of the low rate in the performance? Thank you very much.
Honorable Matuka.
Thank you, Chairperson. My esteemed colleagues have covered many of the bases that I would otherwise have covered, but if I repeat what they said, please forgive me and just say I'm emphasizing the question. Just if I could start off by adding to what's been said in the sense of, although you give us a comprehensive picture here, it's a picture of words and not of figures. We're the Appropriations Committee. Our task is to try and ascertain whether or not we're getting value for money, for the money that's spent on behalf of the public. As one of my colleagues has already mentioned, this fund was announced in 2011, 9 billion rand over 3 years, which takes us to 2014, we're now sitting in 2015, and this is not in context for me. I can't see from your presentation where we are in the bigger picture, as opposed to that initial grant of 9 billion rand over 3 years. Where are we sitting in there? How does this fit into that bigger picture? Perhaps you could just put it in context for us. On slide number 4, you give us a graphic presentation, and then you make a few references to it in slide number 5. But in slide number 5, you say unemployment rate, women 29%. But on the graph over here, it says youth unemployment rate according to gender. So then the women go up to 39.5% and men go up to 33.4%. But it shows a bit of a disjunct, if you know what I'm saying, because on the one we're looking at the youth factor, the one we're looking at the gender factor, but there must be an overlap between the two. It's not as if there are no young females or young males, or all youth are one gender and all genders are one sex. Can you try and give us some kind of a better way of doing this? Because there's obviously an overlap here. It becomes a little confusing. Slide six. I've asked the question in other committees when they present us with similar kind of comparisons. Why is it that we compare ourselves with countries all over the globe, but with none in Africa? You know, we're an African country. We sit here at the southern point of Africa. We're supposed to be one of the better economies in Africa, and yet when we get a a table like this, not one other African country features in here by way of comparison. Can we not change that and at least put in one or two other African countries so we get a bit of an idea of how we rate in our own neighborhood, so to speak, rather than in just the global picture? Because the factors that affect economies in Africa must surely have a certain commonality to them, and I think it would be a better way of comparing ourselves to a country like Turkey, for example, or Indonesia, where the factors are totally different to what's applicable here. I'm glad that in slide number 5 or 7, I beg your pardon, these numbers are very small for my old eyes, you actually acknowledge the regulatory framework associated with employing people. In my opinion, the red tape and the compliance issues are one of our main bugbears in our economy. It slows everything down. It means so many people are employed in non-productive work because you've got a whole bunch of people employed to check on a whole other bunch of people, because some are doing the compliance and others are monitoring the compliance, and it's totally non-productive. So if part of your job's creation is just creating more compliance issues so that more people have to be employed to monitor other people doing compliance, it's not sustainable, because it's not producing anything new. It's just going round and round in a circle, and eventually it's going to catch up, and this beast will eat its own tail. Slide number 9, you say to address the challenge of unemployment, we need higher standards of sustained economic growth. I mean, this is obviously trite, but it's not what's happening. We do not have high levels of sustained economic growth in this country at the moment. And if you compare us with our neighboring countries in Africa, we are way behind. There's something seriously wrong in our economy compared to our neighboring states, because their GDP rates are way higher than ours. What are we doing as the Jobs Fund, as the DGI, as the Department of Small Business Enterprises, right across our government institutions that address these issues? What are we doing to improve this position? How are we doing something to get back to higher rates of sustained economic growth? Because if we don't address that, then all the training and all the educating in the world is not going to help, because we're going to have a whole country of educated but unemployed people, which is not going to solve our problem. If I can take you then to slide 14, where I see it as a nice picture of the situation, but you make statements that I find hard to swallow, in the sense that it doesn't tell us how we're going to do this. It's a nice to have kind of thing. In a number of, just on the third little block down, it says number of projects funded, number of recipients trained, number of new jobs created, number of placements into vacant positions. Now, that's our outputs. But how do we get there? It doesn't help just saying positive socio-economic impact of the creation of sustainable permanent jobs to stimulate long-term systemic change in the labor market. It's a wonderful statement, but we're not told how we're going to get there. How are we going to achieve this? What are the practical nuts and bolts things to get to these nice theoretical statements that are made here? As the Jobs Fund, surely you should be looking at what practical and implementable steps are we taking to achieve these things. It can't just be that we have all these nice things that look nice on paper, they say the right words, but they're not having any real impact. I had the same problem with slide number 15, that is, once again, the funding windows. You know, support for work seekers, just as an example, seeks to link active work seekers, especially the youth, to formal sector opportunities and job placement. Well, that's fairly obvious, but how are we going to do that? What is the Jobs Fund actually doing to achieve that? How do we link the one to the other? There's got to be some modus operandi, some kind of, what's the word I want to, the expression I usually use, you know, the standard operating principles or standard working steps that one takes to achieve it, get from one step to another. Once again, all through this, I have this kind of picture in my mind. It all sounds great, but how do we do it? Nothing in here tells me how we're going to do this. How are we going to convert an amount of money we have and a whole crowd of people working at it to achieve the objective? It's all very well stating that's our objective, and these are all the nice things that we'd like to see happening, but we're not actually saying how it's going to work. target sectors giving effect to the NGP, I had the same sort of problem there. I didn't fully understand what that table was meant to show us, because support services in rural areas under enterprise development, that's fine. Infrastructure, improved telecommunications infrastructure. Well, we're stating the obvious again, but we're not saying how is this going to happen. How does the one affect the other? We make a statement here under construction. New labor intensive construction methods. Well, aren't they old labor intensive construction methods, because using labor to do construction is as old as the hills. Not using labor to do construction is the new thing. So what are we actually saying here? Let's get back to basics and say what we mean, because I find it's a lot of verbiage, it's very verbose, but it's not actually telling us what the deal is. And concurring with my colleagues, I'd also like to know, what is the cost? We're taking a whole lot of money, and we're employing a whole lot of people to do a whole lot of things in the hope of creating some jobs, but where does the cost arrive? Of the total money we spent since 2011, what have we actually achieved in terms of not just employing people in the department, but to actually create jobs? I accept employing people in the department also creating jobs. It's great for them, but there are very few of them, and I don't think that was the intention. They're the only ones who've got the real permanent jobs. The rest of them who want 12 months tops for a permanent job, I'd hate to be in their position. And just in passing, if a permanent job is regarded as a 12-month job, then what is a short-term job? It's not defined. Even in the definitions you give us, you don't say 12 months in there for permanent jobs, but now today you tell us that's what you actually view it as. So please tell us what you view as a short-term job, because I'd also like to know. Then slides 19 and 22, once again, just emphasize what I've been saying. Slide 19 shows us 10 steps you go through in the disbursement process. Once again, it's a whole lot of compliance. A whole lot of people are employed to check on various things that other people have been doing, but it doesn't actually achieve anything. It produces nothing other than more compliance. It's not generating income. It's just seeing that we're ticking all the boxes. And how does this actually create jobs other than just box-ticking exercises? It can't be sustained, because once you've ticked the box, you've ticked it. You haven't produced anything. You've just ticked the box. Slide 20. One of the bullet points there speaks to inability to perform at 80% of set targets. Who sets the targets, and on what basis are these targets set? What process is involved in that? Do your project partners set their own targets? Do you sit with them and have a target setting session? Or do you have predetermined targets that you give them and say, these are the targets you guys have to meet? It just seems to me that from what's been explained to us, because of the compliance side from your side, it's going to be very difficult for people on the other side, your project partners, to come to this particular party. So they've got to come to you. It's almost like going to the bank and wanting a loan. You first got to prove to the bank that you don't need the money before they'll give it to you. It's the same kind of situation we have here, that you're going to have to go there and, as a project partner, prove that I don't really need your grant, but I want it so that I can do what I'd like to do. So I have to do everything right first. Surely you should be facilitating that, getting the project people up and running so that they can employ the people and get the jobs going. Surely that's where your emphasis should be. And I'm wanting to know, is that actually happening, or are you just sitting there as like a teacher in a class saying, well, did you actually pass the test? You know, I don't know whether you understand where I'm coming from, but my concern is that we've concentrated far too much on the nuts and bolts, if you like, rather than the actual outcome. In slide 21, you make a statement, projects are encouraged to put in more than the required match funding per quarter to cover unforeseen events. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Projects presumably are the project partners, but more than the required match funding. Presumably you initially have an amount, if you're talking in rands, that you're going to put in 100 rand to every 90 rand they put in, or whatever the case may be, but then you're encouraging them to do more than that. Is there anything to encourage them to do that? what are you doing then to them to say, look, it's going to be more worth your while if you put more in? You're going to get more out. What is the more out that they're going to get? Monitoring and evaluation is the same thing again. It's more box ticking to see that they're actually doing what they should do. I know it's an important thing, but it's an unfortunate thing because ideally people should be doing what they're supposed to do. We only have monitoring and compliance because people don't and don't want to comply. So if we were law-abiding citizens, we wouldn't need any compliance regulation. It's only there because we need it to be there because we're not law-abiding citizens, which is a very sad thing, but it's the fact that we live with. My colleagues asked those questions already, so I'll skip on to those. In slide number 25, you mentioned that you're going to have a peak staff complement of 69. At what stage will that be and at what cost? And is it necessary to have 69 people employed, particularly once again, if they're all just going to be employed doing compliance? Jobs fund actual expenditure outcome, my colleague has spoken on that one, so I won't belabor that point. I had the same questions relating to the amount of money we spend on compensating employees. I notice in slide 28, you speak there of 35 vacant positions at the end of the first quarter. Is that part of this difference between the 42 staff members and the 69 that you are hoping to have at peak? You say the budget has been reduced by 7 million, mainly due to a reduction in operational items. Now, I can understand that, but then you say reduced in-source services and replaced with contracted staff. The contracted staff are going to cost you money. You're going to have to pay for those contracts. Whatever the contract value is, you're going to have to pay for. How does that reduce your budget? Just explain that to me, because I would have thought if you're replacing one with one, it would stay the same. If you're taking away one and putting it in with something else that's more expensive, it's going to push it up. Does this actually reduce the costs by employing people on a contract basis rather than insourcing them? Maybe you can just explain how it is that reduces your budget. I couldn't see that. Now you say you also want to buy some IT equipment to be procured in the third quarter. What will that be for? What do you need more IT equipment for? What is the projection there? Then you come and you tell us about on slide 30 about withdrawn. I'd like to know, why were projects withdrawn? I see two were withdrawn and two were terminated, or seven were terminated. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Just give us some detail. What actually happened there? Then you have this little piece at the bottom of that slide, funding as at end June 2015. That doesn't tell us when it started. Is this from the inception of the Jobs Fund, right up to the date, June 2015? That 4.74 billion in grants has been committed. Now, committed says to me that you've said to somebody else, we will pay that amount. It doesn't tell us how much you have actually paid. It says what you said you're going to pay. So maybe you can give us an indication, what have you actually paid? What have you actually spent so far? Not what have you committed to spend? Then you tell us what you've disbursed in implementing projects, but again, that might be limited to implementing projects. It might not be the total amount that you've actually spent. 3.54 billion in match funding has been leveraged from project partners. Now, the ratio you gave us was 1 to 125, and 3.54 is against 2.63 isn't that ratio. So I'm just wondering again, is this over the total period or is it for a limited period? What are we comparing? A sort of apples with oranges, and I'm not quite sure what we're looking at. Just getting back to, you gave us a slide, I think I've passed it already, where you gave us cost per job in the USA and things like that, where we have some dollar figures and so on. And I thought, well, it's all very well if we just can have a look and see what is the cost per job creation in the States, for example. But if their definition of a permanent job is a 10-year contract and ours is a 12-year contract, a 12-month contract, it makes a huge difference to the cost of that job because it must be factored over the length of time of the job. So are we actually comparing with the same things again, or are we at a disjunct? I wouldn't know from the figures you present or how we look at it, but if we're saying that's the job, the cost of creating a job, or are we actually saying it costs 60,000 rand to create a job for 3 months, where somebody might earn 5,000 rand? Because if that's the case, then we should rather just give the 60,000 rand to the person and have done, because they'd be far better off that way than having us create a job for them that only lasts 3 months. On slide 34, it's again one of these things where I just wanted to know, you make the statement, the fund chose projects that demonstrate innovative approaches to supporting smallholder farmers by providing access to existing markets, integration into agricultural value chains. Can you give us a bit more information on this? I mean, you're the jobs fund. Now, are you first enabling your project partner so that any job they create will be more viable? Is that what's happening here? Is that what you're actually telling us? That you get a project partner, somebody comes to you with a proposal and says, this is what we want to do. You then facilitate that whole thing in order to create some jobs at the end. Is that what's happening? That's what I'm trying to understand from this. I'm not sure whether I'm understanding it correctly, so that's what I'm asking. Is that what happens, or is that what you would like to happen, or is that part of what your purpose is in order to get that to run? On slide 36, you say again, a once-off injection of grant funds yields sustainable jobs and contribute to economic growth. Well, quite honestly, I don't buy it. A once-off injection of grant funds is not necessarily going to yield a sustainable job. It would be nice if it did, because then we could just go around giving off grant funds all over the place and create hordes and hordes of sustainable jobs. I don't believe it. And so I want to know why you say this is a value proposition. What prompts you to make a statement like this? Because I can't see it personally. All right, slide 37 was the one I was referring to about the cost of job creation in other countries. Slide 38, under the 5th bullet point, you say international versus local. Three costs per job figures for South African programs are found and are reported in the next slide. I don't see them reported in the next slide. Perhaps you could assist me there, because the next slide talks about factors influencing cost per job. And then you speak about the jobs fund portfolio cost per job spread. Can you maybe just give us a definition of what you understand by cost per job? What are you actually telling us? What is this figure you're giving us as a cost per job? Because I'd like to understand exactly what it is we're looking at. Is this what it costs the government, your department, as well as whatever project partner you have to create one job? Is that what we're saying? And if so, does that apply across the board to any job we create, or is it just the permanent jobs, or is it just the semi-permanent jobs? Is it for placements? What exactly are we saying here? I refer to you say the leverage is 1 to 1.25, and I'm just repeating that question. What does that actually mean? Then I get to this thing here in the slides, 44 and 45, both of them have completed internships and trained beneficiaries in them, but one refers to youth, and one refers to women. Now, presumably there's an overlap between these two tables again, because some of those youth will be women, and some of these women will be youth, I'm sure. Can we just have an idea of what the overlap factor is here? Because it could also be confusing from that point of view. Thank you, Chair. I think I'll leave it for there for now. Thank you.
Let's get respondents. We will have a second bite if there is, if members show their interest. Yes, you want to ask a question now or? Okay.
Preferably if you will allow me, Honourable Chairperson. It might just assist, because it's linked to my previous question. I just want to refer to slide number 11, which is the mandate of the Jobs Fund, and that is to create 150,000 jobs. So it's linked to my question previously when I asked for clarity on slide number 31, because that, my understanding of what is indicated there, is that there's 55,000 jobs
have been created of the 150,000 jobs. Just clarification on that. Then slide number 25 and slide number 26 again, and it's because I've asked this question about the compensation of employees. Now reading that as 30.4 million, that is the amount for compensation of employees. Again, does that tell us that that is paid to 42 staff members? Because that's what it seems. So, because 42 staff members are being paid 30 million. Can we just get clarity on that? Because it would be concerning if that is said. And then the last one. No, that's fine, Honorable Chair. It's just those two. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Can I just start in with one or two questions? I think the first question around the movement from DBSA to Treasury. Now, and you also there are two factors to put in place here. Is one is the contextual one, that it was the time when DBSA was going through the restructuring process, where we were kind of effecting a turnaround on DBSA. We were beginning to say that it has to be more focused as a bank, and it has... Now, grants don't sit very well in a banking environment, because banks are supposed to be driving loans in any case. And I think one of the factors that we considered in that process is that as we're doing the restructuring of DBSA, we felt, and I think mutually, that the jobs fund as it is structured does not fit very well with the bank and the functions that we want it to focus on. And as on the basis of that, we then said, let's move this thing into Treasury. So that's just in broad terms, that's the reason. I don't see any major cost beyond what was planned in that. I think, in fact, we actually ended up improving efficiencies of the job fund by actually that action. Whereas that was not the initial stage. It was just to ensure that DBSA is restructured, it's focused on what it's supposed to do, which is a bank, basically, and we have new functions and extending its role in Southern Africa, focusing on municipalities and so on and so on to grow that side of the thing. The second point I wanted to respond to is that I think some of the details that you're asking for, I'm sure we have, and we can give you those details. But I don't think you would come here with all the projects and what they are funding. And we can tell you in detail what was funded in the Western Cape, what was funded in the Eastern Cape. These are the projects, and these are the lessons. In addition to that, probably there's something that we have missed. The Job Fund is an innovative fund. It is a challenge fund. Its success, apart from just the jobs, is also being able to attract partnership with private sector, with NGOs, to come into the party. Now, its success also depends on the capacity of those partners. So you're going to be critical and very focused in assessing the capacity of the partners. Because you're not going to take a partner that has no capacity, no resources. You're looking for partners with experience, partners with capacity, partners with determination, and a track record of implementation of projects. You're addressing a gap because sometimes initiatives of government run outside and out of what is happening in the private sector. No, sometimes what we do does not necessarily stimulate what is happening in the private sector and vice versa. So what we're trying to do with the Job Fund is to begin to develop a new methodology where there is greater connection between what is happening in the private sector, in civil society or civil organizations that are involved in job creation, where you create matchmaking around that and ensure that there is uniformity. We benefit from those skills for innovation that's happening on that side. So it's important that you see it in that sense. The lesson, that's why I think Nazwa probably didn't go to town. That's why the aspect of learning in the job fund is critical. So we actually have a whole network of all of these partners who participate in this project are drawn into a learning process themselves so that we begin to have a conversation about how to create sustainable jobs in the context. And I hope people understood that when we talk about jobs, and we can prove like that, I mean, and the jury is still out there, obviously, to test the efficacy and effectiveness of the job fund. But when you talk about permanent jobs, you actually, it's everywhere else people will say, you cannot say a job it's a permanent if it doesn't meet at least the minimum of 12 months, and that's the minimum. Most of the jobs that we're talking about stand, and in the first instance, it goes beyond the project time frame. Now, most of the funding goes in 2 years, I think most of the disbursement goes for 2 years. You cannot count a job that doesn't go beyond that point. And so, much as we talk about a minimum of 12 months, we're talking about jobs that run well beyond 2 years and beyond that point. But I think there's a minimum that we say we cannot talk about permanent job if you don't put at least a minimum. To say a minimum would be this amount. It cannot be 10 years, obviously. It cannot be 10 years. For somebody who doesn't have a job, 1 year is very enough. It's a long period in itself. It might not be enough, as it were. The third point I wanted to make, I think we're making the point very cautiously to say that the job find as an innovation must generate learning for a whole range of actors, your NYDA, your small business, and so on. That's why I think the research component becomes critical as we implement this project. So there is no contradiction by having a job fund and having an agriculture department and having a small business department, and yet we involve in those sectors ourselves. But what we do is we draw from the lessons to strengthen policy, to strengthen their programs, as it were. And this is a very practical program. I would really encourage that. I think, Najwa, that maybe we should actually make available to the committee the detail of the projects, because we're not just talking theory. I mean, this is the Najwa was extracting analysis out of practical experience, and it's not just a theoretical abstract presentation as some members are trying to demonstrate. There are projects, there's activity underlying some of the observations made in the presentation. And in order to deal with that, Chair, I would suggest that we make available the full list of the projects, where they are, how many jobs they are creating, who's involved in those things. You've got more than $3 billion funding from partners. And some of those are huge, huge funding. And people would not take risk for something that they think that is just a waste of time. They would take risk because they realize that there is sustainability in what they are putting money into. They could take risk because they realize that this actually meets their objectives, both their objectives as companies, but also their objective of ensuring that they run sustainable businesses. So that the fact that you have so much response, which runs to 3.4, 3.4, whatever the figure is in slide 36, that actually demonstrates that the response up to now from the private sector, from NGO, has been very positive. My last point, I think, we've made the point about the job find being one within a context of a whole range of interventions. I think we could have gone to town, but we didn't want to waste your time by actually repeating the government program and around turning around the economy, which has been, I think, so well articulated in different platforms. That the way we seek to ensure that we stabilize the energy sector, the electricity sector, because it's critical for growth. But we're not going to be debating that. Other committees are busy debating that in depth. And we've come at some point here to talk about that when we talk about the interventions in EFCOM and other parts. So one of that's critical, because without stabilizing the energy sector, we're not going to turn around this economy clearly. So that remains important for government, broadly speaking. The issue around ensuring that we increase our performance of our industrial policy and industrial support instruments that we have as government, that has been articulated in different platforms, but we thought it's not what we must come here and do. Our intervention to turn around agriculture is something that we've seen. Agriculture is going to be critical in driving. In fact, we can probably say the 9-point plan articulated by the president and the instruments and activities around that are what underpins most of what we're doing, including the National Development Plan. So that's not where, Chair, we thought the focus is going to be. The focus we thought is about the program, the job fund, and what it seeks to achieve, and whether we're effective in what we're doing. And I think from where we're sitting, and I would assure committee members that
if you are dissatisfied, we can actually arrange that you go through the projects that we're doing. You talk about the issue about youth. You must go to concretely, honorable member, there's a program project called Harambee. And I would say go back and look at what Harambee is doing. That's in essence what we're trying to achieve. And it has massive support. I think in the Western Cape, you maybe should show the clip. In the Western Cape, you've got about, what, 10,000 jobs? 10,000 jobs that it has, placements that it has created. In the Eastern Cape, it's beginning to show that already we're at 2,000, but we're actually going to increase that. These are practical things that are happening there. But, of course, this is an extract, a high-level extract of that. We would not have come and bought the committee by getting into those nitty-gritty details on the project. I hope people understand that, and I would suggest that if you're dissatisfied, seriously speaking, we'll make the project available, the project list available, and so that you go through the list. This is an analysis. It's extrapolate. It is higher level analysis of what we're doing. And it tries to show you where we are weak. And we've been upfront. There are areas where we can tell you now, in the analysis, you might make one or two mistakes, but you learn as you go along. You were talking about the fact that the project job fund seems to be moving and gaining momentum now. The reality is that's how development works. You start, as you go along, you're learning. As you gain experience, it grows in momentum, and your implementation becomes more effective. You sophisticate the instruments that you're using practically in development. And as anybody you talk to will tell you that's what has happened. We brought in experts to assess this thing. A week ago, we had experts, professors from the UCT and everywhere else in the country, to look at whether is the model working. And I can tell you now, if you listen to the debate and the conversation there, it shows that people are beginning to appreciate and accept the model. For this is the model, and how do you ensure that it's integrated in other parts of government? That's going to be the huge challenge moving forward. Thank you very much, sir. I'll ask Mesra to just deal with the technical nitty-gritty. I would really avoid that we go through each and every project to demonstrate, but I think we've got a good document that summarizes all the projects. It can give you a sense of, at the practical level, what we're doing.
Thank you.
lot of the questions that we've been asked focuses on, well, at a very practical level, how do we make this verbiage in our presentation, how do we make the jobs a reality in South Africa? Essentially, the Jobs Fund does that through the support of projects. And I think it's also appropriate for us to explain about how those projects come into the Jobs Fund, in that we issue an open call for proposals. And so civil society, the private sector, public organizations, anybody with an idea around how they can create new jobs in the economy are open to submit an application to the Jobs Fund. Once they've submitted that application, one of the members had asked about, are we just so compliance-driven that we are excluding so many people from applying to the Jobs Fund and being successful? One of the issues that we have to bear in mind is that if we are going to accelerate the creation of new jobs, then those applicants need to have some level of experience in this area, because that is the focus area of the Jobs Fund. We work through intermediaries, so we will not work directly with a startup company, but we will work through an intermediary, for example, like Harambee that you saw on the video, and they are the people who actually go out and advertise the placement services. They are the ones who have a network of employers that is a part of the Harambee program. So when they select those young people who come into the program, they not only provide them with work readiness training, but they also understand what technical skills the employer partners require. For example, one of the partners is a call center at Hollard Insurance. They then train those young people in the technical know-how that Hollard requires. And what happens then is that Hollard will provide these young people with an opportunity to do a short internship there. And once they've done the short internship, they then go through an interview process. Harambee, as the intermediary, also assists these young people to prepare for the interview. They also, because they understand what the employer requirements are at that stage of interview, the employer looks for whether there's a good match. And so the value proposition in that for employers is that the people that have come through training or have work readiness, they know what is expected of them in the work environment. In addition to that, they know what is expected of, if they're going to be employed by Hollard, what Hollard expects of them. They know how to function as call center agents. And at the end of that, the real value proposition is that you have a lower attrition rate because there's a better match between the individual and the employer. So that is really how the Jobs Fund operates. We open call for proposals. We assess that. We look for intermediaries to work with, who then enables us to deepen our reach and to broaden our reach for to work with people that we might not necessarily have the capacity to do, because if we were to do that, we would need hundreds of people to be running the Jobs Fund. So that is how, and we do the same within our enterprise development window. We work with organizations, for example, like Awetu, Shinduka Black Umbrellas. They provide an incubation service for small businesses. They contract with that small business. They, at the beginning, at the outset, develop that small, assist a small business to develop a business plan. They also set a baseline and they say, this is how you must grow your business over a particular period of time. And they also do an analysis of what the requirements are for that particular business. So not all businesses require access to finance. Maybe they require other technical skills. Maybe they require HR skills. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. So when that enterprise comes into that incubator, often that enterprise has 3 years in which to graduate. But they get set particular targets, and part of those targets, of course, those enterprises can only create a new job once they grow as enterprises. And so essentially, at a very
practical level, honorable members, that is how the Jobs Fund achieves the results that it does, through working with our partners and through supporting projects which will result in sustainable jobs. Now, how do we do that? When the project applies to us, we do a financial assessment on not just the implementing partner, but we look at the financial model that that partner has put together for that project. And obviously in that we then look for indicators of sustainability. Will it be commercially viable or not? Often when we work with a civil society, those organizations are not about making a profit, but they do have access to other grant funds that can complement their work, and they have a few income streams. So those are the kind of things that we look for when we assess the application to ensure that once this initiative gets off the ground, sustainability is built into that initiative, and if that initiative is sustainable, then the jobs that are created will also be sustainable, all things being equal, of course, which we can't guarantee, but that is kind of our thinking as we allocate funds to projects. So that's just on a high level as to how we achieve the realities of the number of jobs and the placements. So going to some of the questions about, there was a question about, are we getting value for money? We believe we are getting value for money because it is not a simple calculation to say, you know, X number of jobs, and that is an amount of money that has been spent. And indeed, it is almost impossible for us to be able to calculate the true cost of a job. We've made the point that there are a whole host of expenses and inputs that our Jobs Fund partners bring to the table that is not actually costed. And so this is just a number. If you look at one of our infrastructure projects as an example, we supported the establishment of an incubation hub. Now, this incubation hub is located in Diepsloot. And it makes available business services for the community of Diepsloot and others. But not only are jobs being now created in the construction of this hub, it is also being created through the development of these enterprises that are located in the hub. More so though, this hub is part of a greater retail park. And the understanding is that whoever is working within this incubation hub, whether it be small engineering activities or manufacturing activities, that as the retail park develops, they would then have access to those people in the retail park, not only for mentoring and coaching, but also as a way in terms of being a part of those supply chains. So in that way, the true impact, and in terms of assessing value for money, it's not a straightforward calculation of we've disbursed 2.3 billion rand, but there's 55,000 new jobs and there's another 25,000 placements, and those are vacant positions. And honourable members, we're not trying to skirt the issue. I'm just trying to explain that it is a really complex exercise and that you cannot do a simple arithmetic and then determine value for money. There was a question around staff turnover and whether this has had a serious impact on the Jobs Fund. I think by way of example, we moved the fund from the DBSA last year in November. We opened up a new agriculture funding round in January. We concluded, we did all the assessments of the 200-odd project applications that we received, and we have allocated those funds within a record 9-month period. So while we have quite a high vacancy rate, we have been able to not let that impact on the business of the fund. The other thing to say is that because the fund will have a finite period of existence, we're very cautious around fully filling all our vacancies. the vacancies are filled as a function of to the extent to which our portfolio expands and to the extent that we need additional people on board. We work on a ratio of roughly 7 projects to 1 project manager, and will only expand on a need-to-have basis. The issue around insourcing was, for example, in our agriculture round that we have now, we do not have in-house agricultural specialists. And our staffing model needs to be flexible because you won't need those agricultural specialists 365 days of the year. You need to bring them in. They need to tell us, you know, is it right that you grow potatoes in this area, or is it right that you are setting up a cattle project or a piggery in a, or a dairy project in a particular way. And they look at the promise of job numbers and how that project is going to be implemented. And based on that technical advice, we will then make a recommendation. They then move off the project. So it's a finite period that they come in, help us with the assessment, and they move off. We then will contract them in on a few days per quarter, whereby over and above our project site visits, we take the agricultural expert to the project and say, are they doing the right things with the feed? Are they doing X, Y, and Z? Are the orchards growing as they should? Are they using the right fertilizer? That's how we use the resources. So we try to create a flexible model. This, the job fund staff numbers also is additional to the establishment because of the project nature of the project. There was a comment about the slower growth in the portfolio. That really is a function of the number of projects, honourable committee member, that are successful. And I've indicated what we look for in terms of the selection of particular projects. And of course, that is also a member that asked why there are no projects in the Free State and in the Northern Cape. And we've recognized that, and what we have done to stimulate demand, is demand, but there isn't projects that are viable to the extent that the job fund assists. So what we do before a funding round, we go to each one of the provinces and we connect with the various departments there and stakeholders. So in agriculture, it was various government departments, development agencies, the big co-ops. We invite all of those people to a meeting where we explain what we are looking for in terms of an upcoming funding round. And if they have ideas about a project that they would like to submit, I allocate one of my project managers to work with that applicant and try and assist them to package the project. So we're very conscious of it, but it is a challenge fund. It is a competitive process. We will send through to you the breakdown between private sector, NGO, and public sector. But a lot of our activities is with the private sector and with civil society. Their projects, for some reason, has been more competitive than the public sector applications. How much have we budgeted for each project? I will leave a hard copy, and I will make sure that the committee gets a soft copy. This is the portfolio of projects that we support per funding window. It says how many jobs will be created per project, how much matched funding the jobs fund partner is putting down, and how much grant funding we are making available. So I will, it's in here, I will make sure that the committee members get that. Members are also concerned about why projects are withdrawn and why some projects have been terminated. Some projects are withdrawn because sometimes as the project goes into implementation. For example, we had a graduate placement program here in the Western Cape. They had a model whereby they were going to establish a platform, an electronic platform where small businesses could register and where unemployed graduates could go onto that platform and then match with what vacancies either those small businesses or large businesses have. In moving forward on that project model, what they discovered was that match doesn't happen automatically, that you actually have to do quite a lot of work with the graduates as well as with the employers in order to improve that match. So the model wasn't working as such, and in that basis they then had asked us if they may withdraw the project. Other projects are terminated because the project might at the initiation say, we are going to bring about change and encourage investment in South Africa by providing the right set of skills and by providing infrastructure, and in this way open up a new sector of the economy. So that sounds really great. As the project starts off, the wheels start coming off. Those foreign investors decide they're not going to come. The jobs that they're creating are not those specialized jobs that they say they were going to create, and so things change. What we then do is we engage with the Jobs Fund partner and say, okay, we see that what you're contracted for, what you are actually doing is very different. How do we bring this back to where we started? Through that process, you either come to the conclusion that you can rescue this project, that you can do something with it and still make it achieve its objectives, or that things have changed so fundamentally that you can't. And on that basis, you then terminate the project, which is a very hard decision. But the way in which we do it, we always understand what is the impact on the community, what is the impact on people that have been given jobs, and we take all of those into account before a project is terminated. There were questions about the breakdown of the fund budget. Tankisa, the grant manager, and Neville will speak to the detail, but at a very high level, of the 9 billion rand that has been allocated to the Jobs Fund, 87.6% goes towards grant making, 8.5% goes towards the operational expenditure, and 4% towards other project support costs. But Tankisa and Neville will provide more detail on that. I think we've spoken about the definition of a permanent job. Deputy Minister has addressed that. Then there were questions about the spread of jobs between urban and rural areas. Again, it's a function of the type of projects that are supported. So, you know, in our agriculture portfolio, most of the jobs are in rural areas, while in the enterprise development projects, a lot of the jobs are created within urban areas. But we will provide you with an exact breakdown of that as an input document. The nature and scope of projects is in here. And then the member had asked about, you know, are we overlapping and are we conflating? And yes, I apologize for that around the gender and youth. So we say of those people that have received jobs or of those who are unemployed at a global level, that is the split between men and women. But then within that, there's a different split between how many youth have actually benefited from the Jobs Fund program. I can't answer the one about the high levels of economic growth, but Deputy Minister has spoken to that and other programs and government program around the acceleration of growth. We've spoken about the nuts and bolts of how jobs are actually created. I think I've covered most of the questions. Forgive me if I haven't, and I will most certainly come back if there's something that you really want me to answer on. Thank you.
I think there was a question on compensation of employees for the two jobs for the expenditure. Look, possibly it's a matter of the classification matter. Because what happened is that there are people who are contracted. That's what happens in the process. They are contracted for a 3 year or more than that in the process. So, and there's that. There is, of course, high implication if you really look at that kind. So it could have been that money goes to goods and things, but they are taken as employees in this space, and that has a kind of an implication in that kind of a process. So it's people who are contracted, those with specialized skills in terms of doing that, but you've taken that as part of the process which say that they must be managed there. I think that's why I'm saying it depends. We can then just put it generally, the normal employees, and then take those ones down to a lower level. But since they have kind of contracted for a longer period, I think it's more taken as employees in that space. I just wanted to, and then I think there was also a question about the issue of bureaucratic process, you know, the tax clearance and everything. You'll appraise that it's important that certain government things are in that. Otherwise, we don't want this to be part of the front page, you know, matter, which is kind of, because that's why you need to. But in the face of that, you don't want, you know, projects which you think that they are viable to be derailed in the process. That's why Nigel was relaying to say that we'll assist. There's a project manager who is there to create capacity and the capability of that project which needs to be there. And, but there's a whole process of assessment which comes into that. So that the main intention is to have to realize, despite very difficult, the value for money in terms of certain things when the project is kind of approved. So I said, let me just add on the thing. I was just saying that some of the issues that have been raised are a matter of decay. Like there was a question raised on the spread of the projects, where they are located, and that kind of stuff. We can give you that. There was an issue, a couple of issues, financial performance. We can give you the details. So we've noted the questions. What we'll do, we'll try to get and the breakdown of what you just explained, maybe to show that breakdown. But I think if you think about it, 8% of operational expenses, is normally the norm is around 10%, 10, 12%. That's normally the norm. And having a program that runs at 8%, and it's something that Treasury guards very seriously, because we have to set the example also. And that's important for us to maintain those performance indicators very well. So we'll submit, we'll give you the responses on some of the matters that require just more information.
Any specific thing that members would want to raise before we, Honorable Matopa and Honorable Shopperstone?
No. Also, the whether there were any costs incurred on the termination to be part of the report. Yes. But we want to really appreciate Honorable Chair. You know, it's very important, because what is important to us is to see that this project is coming out, you know, because we did not know whether it is working or not. We appreciate that when we have taken over, now we see the difference, you know, that is coming on the ground, like the one that has been shown. But I think the detailed report that will be given will assist us to choose the project that we need to visit. Because to us it's important. We follow the funds, where it's going, whether there is something that is coming out of those funds. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Professor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to the presenter and to the Deputy Minister. I'm really impressed. Really, I'm impressed. And I would like us to get that report that you mentioned, and we will be following you all the way, and just keep up the good job. I listened very carefully to the presentation, and I think as this committee, we are concerned about the resources of the state. We are worried about us not just following the money, but also worrying about whether we are able to make a difference in growing our economy, in actually investing in things like projects, especially in manufacturing. And when we get the report, we will actually be specific in our follow-ups.
I'd like to also echo my appreciation for the report and just echo what members often say, and I'm sure that the officials know this, that this committee has a responsibility to follow state money, where it is, how it is allocated, how it is spent, and whether we are getting the results out of that. And we do so because at some point we will come back to say, well, to what extent has this money come back into the national fiscus in the form of an expanded tax base? Because again, in the next year, we must see increased allocation. So that's the reason why we really want to dig deep into the issues related to the budgeting, the expenditure, the management of expenditure, and the outcomes. We will also come back to ask the question, how much of it, or how does it then begin to change the GDP picture of the country? So that's why we as the Standing Commissioner on Appropriations, we like to really go deep into the numbers and compare the numbers to the actual work that is being done and the final outcome. But I do want to say that, you know, projects are by their nature time-bound, and at some point projects do shed jobs. But what becomes critical, and this is the issue that has been, is being discussed everywhere in government and in the country general, is the issue of the schemes built in the process. And importantly, the multi-skilling of each individual who, at the end of a particular project, can then go on to the next employment, confidently understanding that he or she will be productive. Whether in the next state-funded project, or in the private sector. And I think that's the key issue also that we would like to emphasize. In your monitoring and evaluation of the outcomes of the project, I think that is one of the areas that you have to focus on. But lastly, let me just say this. I think it is important to acknowledge and appreciate the rigor with which you go through for assessing those who must benefit from the project, not those who must come in to benefit into the job fund itself. Because you can't be, government cannot be careless about the integrity of those you attract as your partner. Absolutely not. Because then we will come back to raise our finger and then say there was corruption here. And we don't want to do that. So, absolutely be very rigorous about the integrity of those you attract as your partners, whether private sector, NGOs, or whatever form of civil society organization. The unfortunate part about public money in the hands of the state is attract, for want of a better word, it attracts debt. And you might actually find yourself funding ghost projects. And that's not what you want to do. And certainly that's not what this committee wants to do, wants to see you do it. For instance, the experience of national lotteries in the past, in the previous committee I was sitting in, and I'm sure many of the members would know this, that unknowingly they were funding NGOs that were either non-existent or that were doing shall we say, whose activities were quite questionable, but funded by the state. Until the National Lotteries Board was alerted to this, and they began to dig deep into some of these things, you get instances where state money is used by groups or individuals who want to be the go-betweens between the project and those who must benefit from the project, and cut a big slice of money as part of their own compensation and so on. And this is what this committee doesn't want to see happen. And I'm certain that National Treasury is quite aware of these things, and that's not what you would want to do. And so, we fully support the rigor with which you scan the partners you attract so that their integrity must inform you that they will produce the desired outcomes, the goods and desired outcomes. Finally, this is a very small drop, 9 billion rand, very small drop in the ocean when you look at the challenge that South Africa has of unemployment. And whatever you do will certainly have effect on the other state departments as well. And I think this kind of contribution has got to be appreciated, it's got to be strengthened, it's got to be widened, so that we knock a big chunk off the unemployment figures that we have. Thank you very much for availing yourselves, Deputy Minister and your officials. Thank you, members, and everybody else who is taking interest in coming to this briefing. We would like to release National Treasury and hope that we will get the written submission as we have promised the Deputy Minister, including the list of projects and so on, so that members also use that as part of their oversight as they have said.
Thank you very much.